Welcome to Journey from Jacob. From our first breath to our last heartbeat, we are all on a journey. Jacob was a biblical character whose journey is documented for our benefit. Like all of us, there were unforgettable moments along the way, which required decisiveness. One of those decisions determined his destination. We will not only discuss Jacob's journey, but Israel's as well, right up to date. May this podcast inspire you to make choices along your way that will benefit others and guide you to the destination we all long for.
Shalom, Mishpacha. Welcome, family and friends. Chabradim. Welcome to Journey from Jacob. This will be our third episode. This time we're going to transition from last week, which we spoke about the identity of Jacob and why we call the name of the podcast Journey from Jacob. This time I'm going to elaborate on what we spoke on the first week, actually, that the podcast is sponsored by, and it's a wing of, it's representative of the Ministry of Comfort My People, which is a ministry to the Jews in Israel and beyond. I mentioned that we support the work of Messianic community in Israel, which are indigenous. They live in Israel. They're citizens of Israel, but they're not necessarily all Jewish, because in Israel you have about 80% Jewish and approximately 20%, which includes Arabs, Druze, some Bedouin as well, and some other mixed people groups in there. There's many of them. Israel's made up, I've said this before, of about 100 plus nations from around the world. It's a miracle land. And that many people represented in such a tiny space is like nowhere else. So we're going to speak about why Comfort My People exists, where it came from, and how does this tie in with a journey from Jacob. So Comfort My People is something that I did not invent. I did not dream about starting. It wasn't a plan that initiated in my own mind. I was actually asked to start it. And it was from a large global missions organization where I was asked to become on staff. So there's a few steps in going backwards to the history. But what happened is a kind of a unique and unusual, certainly for me, experience, was that I had in my heart, so I got to even go a little further with background, is that I'm a carpenter by trade, carpenter, cabinet maker, and remodeler, renovator, builder. And that's been my life since 1979, my own business I started in 79. But of course, I've had experience just from working with carpenters, cabinet makers, furniture makers, and renovators. So when it came time, I started my own business. Short story of a long story is that I gave my life to Yeshua in 1980. So the first year I was without him, went bankrupt, looked hopeless. But when I gave my life to Yeshua, I said, I'm working for you and none other. So that began my journey as a tradesman, craftsman. And that was started around 1980. But in 2010, so we're going up 30 years, I was working. I had my own business, a cabinet making shop and renovations, and things were going really well. But I had this strange feeling, maybe you've had this before, that I had to call somebody. And it was somebody that I only knew from meeting him a few times, but I respected him highly. And he was the president and co-founder of this large ministry. And so I felt to call him. It was unusual. I'd never done that before. So I was in my shop. I went outside and I got on my phone and I called up the organization and they put me on hold. And he came along, said hello. And he said, Paul, you've been my friend for so long and you've never called me before. And I felt that was a little strange because I didn't know we were really friends. I knew him. I respected him. I'd heard him present the gospel and speak about his ministry, but that was about it. So I was wondering why he said that. And I felt a little bit, oh my gosh, I should have been calling him along. I don't know what's going on. Why did I call him now? So he says, I need to call you back. He calls me back. And this time I'm sitting down outside, a little bit curious about why I'm even calling. And he said to me, before we go any further, we need to pray because this is a holy moment. So he did, he prayed. And we spoke a little bit, and he wanted to know why I was calling. I said, be honest, I don't really know. And he said, well, I'd like you to come into the office tomorrow, and we'll talk. So I'm like, okay, I wasn't planning on that. I was working for a living and all this, but because I was self-employed, and I was on a project that, you know, no one else was paying for it. It wasn't a time thing. It was just a project that needed to be finished, but it was no rush. So I went to the office the next day expecting to meet with him. And receptionist called his office and he said to have me come in. So I went to the door. The door was not open. So I kind of knocked or cautiously opened the door. And I realized there was a meeting going on, which was kind of strange. I thought it was just him and me. He said, no, come in. And then he wanted me to say a little bit about my testimony and why I was there and what was on my mind. I'm like, I didn't bargain for this, but here I am. And I just shared a little bit of my testimony and said, I really don't know why I'm here. And then he got up and said, well, we're going to pray for you. And if anyone wants to come up and pray for him, just do that. And so here I am now. People are surrounding me, praying for me. And he prays as well towards the end of a few others and says, God, you've brought me a Jewish carpenter, and I don't know what to do with him, and I'm afraid. And he repeated that two more times, and each time his voice boomed louder, and I'm feeling like this is getting stranger by the minute. But I knew it was not strange. It was a very well-respected ministry, very effective, and reaching all these people. They had work in 79 nations at the time. But I said, you know, at the end, I just said, well, okay, thanks for having me. And I figured that was it. And he said, no, let's come sit in my office now. We're going to talk. Go in his office. Then in comes this man who I knew. He was actually lived down the road from me. And I had gone on a mission trip with him in Croatia. And we went from Croatia to Bosnia, Bosnia to Serbia, and different places in Croatia. Because we were doing a construction project, and that's why I was on it, to help him with some of the work. He was actually not in construction, so it was good for him to have me, and it was a great experience for me to be there, and I was just enjoying the opportunity to help this ministry in Croatia that needed, you know, they needed help. And so we did that. Was one other fellow with us, and, you know, things were going well. And every evening, though, the pastor whose church was, we were working on, and he'd been working on it for 7 years and still was, you know, in need of much more work. But each evening he wanted me to either share the testimony in his church or share my testimony and do a Bible study in different places. So every night we went to different places, not only in Croatia with amongst some very, very poor people and people who are struggling in so many ways. In their homes, we went, you know, no electricity, no running water, no, you know, the whole nine yards. But they were very warm and welcoming and wanted me to speak, which I found strange. So here I am in this foreign country, and I'm speaking to people in different locations. And then he took us to Serbia. Serbia was the next place we went to. Same thing, even poorer people, but the room was just packed. So they knew ahead of time that we were coming. People were standing outside and listening outside from the window of this facility. And he asked me to share. And so some things happened at that night where that were really remarkable. Obviously, God, I love to tell these stories, but there's too many of them and too many details. And then from there, we went to Bosnia. And Bosnia is like 90% Muslim. And so I'm speaking in two churches there. We stayed in a Muslim's apartment. She actually left so we could stay there. And she took us around and wanted me to see the synagogue, the largest synagogue that was in Europe up until Hitler's time when he got rid of all the Jews. And they were sent to concentration camps where they were killed, massacred. And so I spoke in these places. I spoke in two churches plus in this family's home, a smaller group. But the weird thing is, why did they want me to speak? They didn't know me from a hole in the wall, and I just didn't get it. But they were fascinated that I was Jewish and that I was a believer because they read the Bible. This is repeated. And I'll tell you that this was my first experience. So I don't want to go too far into the story without going back to that day when I had made that phone call and the next day when I was in the office. But I will continue on. And as I told you, I speak in circular I think, in circles. That's similar to much of Hebrew thought. It's circular and rather than linear, but I don't want to go too far, of course. So I'm going to go back to that day when I'm sitting in the office, and this man who I went to this mission trip with in Croatia, Serbia, and Bosnia, he walks in. Like, he wasn't invited in, he just walked in to talk with this man who was the leader of the ministry, and looks at me and said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "I don't know, I'm trying to figure that out." So the president said, "Well, do you know this man?" He says, yeah, he came on a mission trip with me. And he goes, "Well, what do you think of him?" He goes, "Well, I've been praying he would become my assistant and help me in this, you know, these efforts of going to different countries." So next thing I know, I'm asked to join the staff, come back, you know, pray, obviously, myself, pray with my wife, come back and make a decision. So I went back home, like, still not sure what all happened, you know, but my world was kind of rocked. And I told my wife, and she says, "You know, you've been asking the Lord for direction, you know, ever since we got saved. And, you know, I've always said that you need to be out there more. You need to speak more. You need to share what you've learned from the scriptures and from relationship with God, etc. And so this is God speaking, I believe." And I agreed with her, as strange as it seemed. So the next day I go there, I start signing papers, and I'm on staff. There's no salary, I find out, but it's all by faith. You're supposed to raise money. And I said, "I don't know how to raise money, and I would never ask anyone to support me for doing something that doesn't benefit them." So I didn't tell them that, but I said, "This is just not who I am." But I told God, I said, "So I'm trusting you, if this is you, that you will take care of us." And so that's how we started. Now, 3 years later, 3.5 years later, I'm in my office now. I've been going on trips, and I'll just run down some of them, because in every single country that I went to, the leader of the ministries asked me to speak or do a Bible study and share my testimony, who I am, why I'm here, how did I get saved, things like that. And, you know, just let God speak through me. I was like, why do they want me to speak? They don't even know if I can string three sentences together to make sense, you know, let alone be responsible for a message from the scriptures. But they did. And so I put two and two together. Finally, it took me some time, but I was asked to speak because the same reason I said before initially was that they knew I was a Jew, they heard I was a Jew or in my testimony somehow, and they just knew that Jews are supposed to be a part of this biblical story, but they've been missing for so long. Where are they? When are they returning? And now here they are. So I'm in India a few times, some of these nations a few times. I was in England working at a ministry, an Iranian ministry that translates Bibles for the first time in history into Farsi. And they're shocked. I'm a Jew who believes in Yeshua and all this, and they want me to speak, answer questions and stuff. And it's really fascinating me. So Mexico and some really, really tough places repeatedly. India, I don't know if I said that a few times. Gosh, I can't remember them all. Ukraine, Kenya, I can go on and on. So, but every single place, they were fascinated that I was a Jew who believed in Yeshua. Some made me just go around. Before I would leave the church, I had to go around touching people and blessing them because they heard about the Abrahamic blessing. And I'm trying to explain, look, this is not like that. It's not what it means, you know. But I didn't want to be rude or anything, so I was glad to pray for them and all. But I didn't want to think that this is a magic thing or rubbing a rabbit's foot or something in that line. But what I'm getting to is that we're going to go back now to that day, the first day in the room with the director, the leader of that ministry, founder. And he said, "You have, God, I don't know what to do with this man. He's a Jewish carpenter, and I don't know what to do with him, and I'm afraid." He repeated that three times. And I could never understand why he said he was afraid. I mean, I was nothing to be afraid of. I'm a Jewish guy. Jews are not to be feared, really. You know, we don't have a history of fighting, so, except biblical history, but, and more modern history for sure. But we're not. The Israel army is a defense force, counter to what people say. Israel's not a colonialist empire. It doesn't go and steal territory like other empires. They're not an empire, period. They're a tiny country surrounded by humongous Muslim nations and they all hate them to some degree or another. So they don't go out conquering. Had to get that out. So anyway, in 2013, after about 3.5 years or so going to different nations, I was asked by this president if I would be willing to start ministry in Israel. And I was kind of curious about that, but facetiously, and this is kind of my humor, I said, well, give me 15 seconds and I'll pray about it. And he didn't have the same sense of humor. He didn't know what I was talking about, but I said, no, I'd be glad to. I don't have to pray because I know that God's been waiting for this to happen. And the reason is because my people never had the gospel in a language that they can even understand, let alone come to faith in Jesus, whom they were accused of killing for 2,000 years. And so they were void of the gospel. I could speak a little bit about this, but the Jews are the most unreached people group in the world for the longest period of time in history. So they need the gospel. They need to be told how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news, news of salvation in Yeshua. So this opportunity wasn't for me to go and do it, but to meet believers in Israel who were doing that and come alongside them with support. So, the opportunity was just phenomenal. And I said yes, but I had no idea what to do about that. Well, then it had to go through the ranks of the leadership there to make sure everyone was in full agreement, which took some time. I had 3 different interviews because this was a ministry that was reaching unreached people groups. So the question was, well, why should Israel be one of our nations? We haven't supported Israel previous. Why now? They're not an unreached people group. They broke the Bible and everything. Of course, they're the Bible. That people go there. It's the Holy Land. They're not an unreached people group. So I had to really find reasons to say, well, they are. I just knew they were unreached, but I didn't know all the statistics about it until I inquired from the Lord, how do I find this out? Turns out there was a man that I had met previously who was in charge of all the data for this ministry, and he had done all the research. And according to the research he had done that was already reported from larger ministries, that's all they do, look for unreached people groups and different nations, that Israel was literally the most unreached people group in the world for the longest period of history. And so I had to come up with those facts to present to this leadership group so that they could see just the authenticity of even having a ministry. So it comes out true. So there's, at the time, 2013, 14, around that time, the statistics were that in Israel, there was approximately 12 to 15,000 Messianic believers. Now that included Gentiles. So there was a mixture of Jews and Gentiles who were considered and still are the Messianic community. These are Gentiles come there because God led them there. It's an incredible phenomena. But they go there feeling God led them there, and they click and they meet Jewish believers, and sometimes they lead Jews to faith, join forces. It's be like the body of Christ in America. There, it's the body of Messiah. So the percentage of these Messianic believers was approximately 0.5% of the population. So, but if you extract the Jews from the Messianic community, that number becomes much less, and it was at the time 0.025% of the population. Tiny number, fraction of a tiny country at the time especially. So they certainly qualified to be an unreached people group, because in order to be factored in as a unreached people group with the Joshua Project, you had to be less than 2% of the population. That meant that you were somewhat like an evangelical believer. The Bible was true. You believe it was true. Jesus was God. And, you abided by his word and faith and practice. So Israel qualified to be about 0.025% of the Jewish population, which is remarkably low. So obviously they qualified, and the need became almost like shocking. It was shocking to me. And so I said, this is something that is definitely a current need. Fortunately, now fast forward 2025, and that number it's still below the 2%, but it's gone up to, they're not even sure, because it's hard to keep track, especially with this war. but it went from 0.025 to about 0.2 or 3%, which seems like nothing, but it's like five times of what it was in 2013. I'm not saying that, wow, we got to sing and dance, that, you know, the story's over, they've been reached, people. No, they're not. And they still don't have a Bible in their own language, which is coming close because of one of the ministries we support, which I will speak about in another time. So all this said, that I saw the need to go, but I didn't understand why, when I go back to the day when this ministry leader said to God, you know, I have this Jewish carpenter, I don't know what to do with him, and I'm afraid. What was he afraid of? I never asked him. I didn't feel it was really for me to ask, but I was still curious until it dawned on me, because I was starting to understand the opposition that was out there, which I was previously somewhat ignorant of, and I feel somewhat sorry about that, was that even though I was born again, my wife and I were part of a church from basically the time we got saved. We started going to a church, and we were the only Jews there, but that didn't matter to us because we were welcome, we were loved and respected, and, you know, we just felt like we belonged. And that was for quite a while. And it was the only church we'd ever gone to, other than a visit here and there. But for the first 17 to 18 years of our faith, that was the only church we knew of. And so we thought that all believers loved the Jewish people. All who loved Yeshua also loved the Jewish people and wanted to see them saved. But that was not the case with most of the world. We never realized how rare it was in the church where we were going to, that it was very rare. And in the Christian faith, or the denominational faith, most denominations had one form or another of replacement theology, some very outright and some somewhat hidden. Not hidden on purpose, but underlying. And this is where it takes a little bit of an education. And I'm going to pretty much bring this to a close soon. But the Christian faith, which has all the evangelical denominations lumped together, so I can't say that one denomination is a blank statement for all churches, denominations. But the fulfillment theology, it was the same thing as replacement theology, says that the Jews had their place in time, which is the time being the Old Testament portion of the Bible, but from the time of Matthew on, the New Testament, the church is the leading figure, the chosen people. And not only that, but all the promises that were given to the Jews was negated because of their disobedience. And God abrogated those promises and transferred all the promises from the Old Testament to the church in the New Testament and leading up to current times. I couldn't understand that when I first heard that. To me, it's like, how could you actually read the Bible and come to that conclusion? But they did, and it's been done. So we will talk a lot about this as time goes on because it's too large of a subject. But the fear, which I didn't understand then, was because the support of the ministry, any global ministry, any Christian denominational ministry, interdenominational ministry, non-denominational ministry, was still supported by Christians who were part of Christian denominations. And very few of them didn't have some level of replacement theology. Now, you're going to say, well, not my church. Our church is totally pro-Israel. And I would have to really give you some more information about what that means, which I will do in very little right now. But it starts back in the Garden of Eden, and then it becomes an issue with the calling of Abraham out of his land to come to a nation which I will show you, and you will be the father of a people who are yet to be born. You will be the father of many nations. So that was the promise. But in that promise, he said, you will be a blessing to all the families of the earth through the nations of the world. And in you, I will bless. And I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And he repeated the same promises to Isaac and to Jacob, and then to Jacob's descendants, which make up 12 tribes of Israel, which are the Jewish people from that time leading up to today. We take that all the way into the New Testament, where there's 12 tribes, 144,000 from each, 12,000 each from the 12 tribes of Israel. So they go right to the very end of time, at the end of the book of Revelation. So the bottom line is, what do you do if you bring this Jew here? Now, this is, you know, my extrapolation, because I didn't want to go in this conversation, but I was wondering all the time what the fear was from a man who was really not a fearful man. I mean, he'd been to places that most people would cringe because he was very courageous. But the fear was, what's going to happen, you know, when there starts to be this theological confrontation that now we're supporting ministry in Israel? This is not the Israel of the Bible. This is a different Israel. It's some made-up thing that took place from, you know, this wealthy entrepreneurs that created Israel and started buying all this ammunition and warfare equipment. And so that's one of the thoughts. But they don't think that this is modern Israel. Some do, and they support it, but the support, even that way, it's got its limitations, which I will speak about, because those who bless Israel will be blessed, but those who curse will be cursed. Blessing and cursing have definitions in Hebrew, using the Hebrew words that are very specific, which we won't talk about now. But the reason we call ourselves Comfort My People is because I had to give a name for this ministry, and I didn't even know what to do about that. Well, Israel Ministry, something like that. Very generic. And I asked the Lord, what would you want us to call this? And he said, Comfort My People. And so I started really doing it. I knew where it came from. I had read Isaiah many times, and I knew it was in chapter 40, verse 1 and 2, where we were going to get this from. Actually, one of my favorites, I had memorized that some years ago, the entire chapter, which it's hard for me to do now. So I love that chapter. But the beginning of it is one that I'd never heard taught before, where it says, Comfort My People. Comfort My People. It's a commandment. It says it twice, and it's an imperative in Hebrew. And so this ministry had to have a attachment to this verse and verse 2, speak tenderly, speak to the heart of Jerusalem, tell her that her warfare is over, for she has received double from the Lord's hand. This needed an explanation, because if it was preached, taught, and maybe you've heard it, I never heard it before taught or preached, but I knew that I had to understand this way better than I did, because I'm going to start explaining why we're calling this Comfort My People. So I'm going to have to go from there, because our time is up, and I'll just bid you shalom and hope that you could continue to listen. I know that I kind of jump around, which might bother some of you, but I'm trying to get a point across that is ancient in nature, and it's hard to just do it like ABCs or 1, 2, 3, break things down in outline form. Some would have no problem with that, but for me, I'm so personally engaged that it's hard for me to drop the emotions while I'm trying to teach something that is historical and biblical, and yet denied and avoided for 19 centuries plus. Shalom, shalom, till next time.
We bless you for taking the time to consider this message. May it cause you to be fruitful and effective and lead others along the way with confidence and determination. Check out our website at comfortmypeople.com to become better informed and equipped to restore righteousness to the people of Israel, America, and beyond. Please consider sharing this and visit us on social media. Shalom and blessings.